And then when the job came up with Twickenham, I got it. They knew who I was, I suppose. I played for England, played for the Lions.
Yeah.
And that's my life story. Oh, sorry.
That was under the title Technical Director, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah, something like that. It
what did the job actually consist of?
Well, that's a very good question. People ask me, I'm joking now, what did you do at Twickenham? I said, well, I was in charge of the escape committee. no. Really, I had a strange brief. I mean, it was to develop the game of rugby and to develop coaching. I remember at the first full committee meeting I went to, one guy, the late Dickie Kingsworth from Yorkshire, said, Mr. President, I've got a complaint. There's too much coaching going on. And I couldn't for the life of me remember who the hell. I said to myself, who's coaching them? You know, what they're doing. So the coaching advisory panel were younger people, Jeff Butterfield, Ray Williams, who else was there? Jim Card, Lynn Tatham, Bob McEwen, Ian Beer, people like that. And they were interested, as I was, in getting the game changed, to, you know, to improve, but it was a slow process. The committee, through the coaching committee, they were keen, but that was only, say, 10 people out of 55 who were keen on it. So there was quite a lot of quiet opposition to any change. So it took quite a long time to get people to think a bit more about the game.
And how long did you stay in that job, Don?
Ooh, till 1999. Yeah. 30 years nearly. I was into my 30th year, yeah. I have seen rather a lot of change, and I must confess.
And what do you look back on with most satisfaction?
Well, in terms of sheer enjoyment, I mean, going back in a sort of sequence, the RAF was fantastic because it opened my eyes to good rugby players and so forth. That was my first taste. Then I played for England. That was fantastic, you know. A boy from Percy Park playing for Northumberland and England. Oh, incredible. Then I had out in the wilderness, went to college. Then I teach, John Glosser re-killed it. I thought it was marvellous. Absolutely marvellous. Thought it was in heaven in Gloucester. And the panel, the advisory panel, I was getting more and more invitations to go and coach here, there and everywhere. And generally through counties, because they were quite strong in those days. Then I was very concerned that the England players at the time, we never had any halfbacks. We had no scrum half, no outside half. And I realised how important they were to a game, because they could shape a game. They could, you know, you could go that way, you could go that way, you could go that way, you know. And they just weren't there. And to be honest, it took us years and years to change attitudes. The committee, well, there was a fight. There's always two games. There was a game on the pitch and the game off the pitch. I was always aware of it. And the game on the pitch relied on having decent players at halfback. Wilkinson, I keep mentioning Wilkinson, to me he's been a revelation. Not only, I met him at Worcester once, in about 97, 8, something like that. I said, what's there about this boy? Because he'd been on the school's tour. He said, well, he sees the opposition, where they're lying, and he knows whether to miss a man out or two men out even, and he could see what's happening, and apart from his place kicking. And that, to me, doesn't sound very much, but it was enormous, because here was somebody who was thinking, could see what was happening. And it had taken a long, long time. I'm not saying there weren't some good players in the meanwhile, because there were. I mean, Mike Teague was fantastic. When England in 1991 got into the final of the World Cup, they had a very good side indeed. And they understood the game. But even, I told you the story about Rory Underwood, you know, he just finished off. And by God, he was brilliant. But it really hinged on good halfbacks. And in the early days, there were none. That was amazing to me. I thought, the whole of England, they can't find some decent halfbacks, you know. And so I was trying to educate the selectors as well. That was an interesting one, you know. Because they'd come from my era, and players that initially were Sir, and then, you know, became much more matey nowadays. I don't know what to do with Martin Johnson and so forth, you know. I can't believe they call him Sir. It must be Martin or something like that. So it was a gradual process of changing attitudes, and it took a long, long time. And you were always trying to educate the committee people, and that was damn difficult, I can assure you, because they had their own interest in the county championship, which everyone could see was really struggling. Now it's second, third, fourth grade. You know, they don't even get championship players, I don't think. So that was a challenge, enormous challenge. And I introduced in 1973 awards, but I tested the marketplace by saying, do you want awards to these courses I was running? And I used to go around the countryside to different counties, different venues. And we gradually built up what we're doing. And we had a lot of coaches. We had senior coaches and staff coaches. And we got up to about 100, which sounds a lot, but it isn't over the country. And they're all doing it voluntarily, by the way. You know, so it was great from one point. It was a tremendous atmosphere wherever you went. And you met some wonderful people like Chalky White, since passed away. But he became the Leicester coach.
Yeah.
And Chalky was a thinker of the game, a bit like me. You know, and we bounced things off each other. And that was brilliant. There was a one or two more like that, you see. And I got the university people involved in the coaching awards, because they knew how to teach and what to teach. So they would give us some method. I was quite happy to use everybody, you know. And then I got very friendly with Villepre of France. Because he was a fullback. I just missed him in playing terms. But I knew him, and I got to know him, and because I'd seen him at all the England-French games. And I invited them over, and we're now in late 70s, 80s. And he had an interesting philosophy of the game, you know. Pass, 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 penetrate. Pass, 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 penetrate. And it was all very good. It was fun, but it was also very educational, because it made people gradually start thinking as to what they were doing. But the selectors didn't, a lot of the time, I don't think they honestly understood what was required to make a successful side. They certainly didn't. They didn't recognise halfbacks. Only when they must have forgotten Marks and Curry, because it took a while before Dooley and Ackford appeared on the scene. You need a line and forward, you need a muscle man. You need a Johnson and one other. Gloucester had two of the same kind yesterday, and you want one of a different type. You know, you've got to get the balance right.
Mm.
And so I was educating selectors in a quiet way. One selector, who shall be nameless, came to me and said, would you keep me in the picture? I've never done this before. You know, I don't know what I'm looking for, really. And I used to give him a one-to-one. Incredible. Absolutely incredible.
Well, at least that was honest.
Yes, he was honest, yes. Yes. And he played for England, good. And he was my generation, so probably that's why he did it. It was quite interesting. But I wrote a lot.
So you'd think books. That coaches ought to be on the selection panel, eh?
Yes, I think, because if they're taking the trouble to go out two nights a week and on a Saturday travel everywhere and try and help these players, I think it's... I mean, you've got good coaches and bad coaches. Everyday life's the same. But the good ones would educate. They would bring it out of the players. You know, why did you do this? Why didn't you think of this? Etc., etc. Chalky White, as I say, was exceptionally good. A lot of people didn't like him, because he could be quite brusque if he wanted to, but he was brilliant at summing up games and people. And he rang me, and then he joined our staff at Twickenham. Yeah. So it was rather nice having him that way. But it was a strange era of gradually building up awards, books, leaflets, teams. I couldn't do anything about the change in making divisional rugby more popular than this, and you know, that was not my business. I couldn't influence the 50 people that much. I could influence coaching, but then they were in the minority. And so it took us a long while, until about the 1990s, when we got Jeff Cook as a manager, who was a teacher and trainer, and Roger Rutley, who was the coach, who was a teacher as well. And they were much more methodical in what they did. When you have someone who's got no background, I mean, you do get exceptions, probably more so nowadays, but if you don't get an exception, it's very difficult, very mundane. they keep doing the same things, generally the same mistakes. And Jeff Cook was excellent manager because he'd been teaching, so he understood the psychology of how to teach. Another coach would write on a board, and he would, on a whiteboard, and he'd write lots of things which the players had to do. And I took him aside and I said, look, they'll only remember one thing at a time, these players. So I suggest you quietly rub off 29 things there and leave one or two at the most. Then they'll remember it. And it, that was my role, was to educate. Gradually to educate. And it took a long time, I must be honest.
I'm afraid I interrupted you as you were about to tell us about your books.
Well, they were obviously all coaching books. I did a lot for the union. I did 10 pamphlets on skills. Mine, I got other people involved as well to think of drills and all sorts of things like that. But I was generally chief editor of everything, because you know, at the end of the line, it came to me, you know, if I was going to publish it or not. So I did dozens of pamphlets, booklets into the rugby union itself, and I did 3 or 4 books outside to have done privately, because don't forget, I was a professional and they were all amateurs. I was getting paid for it. Some people would remind you of that, you know, you're getting paid for what you're doing. Mm-hmm. We're not. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, you don't have to do it, of course. Anyhow, the books were mostly on, there was a guide for players, the contribution of a guide for coaches, which came out together, not very far apart. I wrote a one on back play. There was quite a few. But I made a lot of films, and I'm all for sharing knowledge. In latter era, when one or two people joined the rugby union full time, the idea was to invite them to go out to clubs and make their services free of charge. In fact, Dean Richards, who was at Leicester at the time, rang me once, said, what they call the Phil Lardner, ex-Rugby League. He was a director of Rugby League, I think, for a little while, and he joined us. And I said, yeah, have him. You know, he can go to your club, do sessions with you, we won't charge, because we, the union, will pay for it. So I was quite interested in improving and trying to help everyone as much as I could. So that's what I did.